Blog Talk Radio. Have a little fun. Who came up with the Yugo?
Because
Americans laugh at that car.
Well, we don't want the Yugo. We wanted Wilson. I'm sorry. Let me get that. What happened here? Oh, we're getting it. Here we go. Will Rogers. Will. Here we go. This is an old ancient recording at the beginning of
the history of the white man's dealings with the Indian, and many parts of the record are stained with the greed and avarice of those who have thought only of their own profit. But it is also true that the purposes and motives of this great government and of our nation as a whole towards the red men have been wise, just, and beneficent. The remarkable progress of our Indian brothers towards civilization is proof of it, and open to all to see. During the past half century, you have seen the schoolhouse take the place of the military post on your reservation. The administration of Indian affairs has been transferred from the military to the civil arm of the government. The education and industrial training the government has given you has enabled thousands of Indian men and women to take their places in civilization alongside their white neighbors. Thousands are living in substantial farmhouses on their own separate allotments of land. Hundreds of others have won places of prominence in the profession, and some have worked their way into the halls of Congress and into places of responsibility in our state and national government. 30,000 Indian children are enrolled in government, state, and mission schools. The great white father now calls you his brothers, not his children. Because you have shown in your education and in your settled ways of life sound, manly, worthy qualities of sound character.
Now, one thing Wilson didn't mention in his speech, and I don't know where he gave it, but the fact it wasn't until, I think, the Calvin Coolidge administration or Hardy administration when the Native American Indians were became citizens. Because of the Dred Scott Act back in the prior Civil War, there was a 32-page decision by Roger Taney. He wrote it, the Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court, the first Roman Catholic to sit on the Supreme Court bench, and as the first Roman Catholic to become chief. Native American Indians were also not included as citizens. They were in the same category as the blacks or Negroes or Africans, as the term was used then. Also, Woodrow Wilson did a lot of things. He doesn't mention the fact that the mission schools abused the Native Americans, that they were not allowed to use their Indian dialects, Indian language. They were punished, and the mission schools were brutal. Being part Native American myself, I know some of the history, and I worked with Native Americans in economic development, community development projects, and other things. Now, he mentions that the Native Americans were somewhere in Congress. I don't know of any at his time, but we did have a vice president in Herbert Hoover's administration, Charles Curtis, who was from Oklahoma. He was baptized a Catholic, but he converted to Methodism. He went to the mission schools, and he had a great voice, and we'll play a recording we have in the Virzola Archives. And other Native Americans, Jim Thorpe, one of the great athletes, who has it because he did something that violated the Olympic rules about this time. He lost his Olympic medals. And it's a famous movie with Burt Lancaster playing Jim Thorpe. So there are a lot of issues about the Native Americans. And, of course, they were used in World War II in Wind Talkers, a movie that we should all see. I haven't seen it. I have it in the archives. Among the other birthdays today, and also on Woodrow Wilson, about this time they snuck this through, and I'm surprised Ron Paul hasn't brought this up, was Woodrow Wilson's administration was responsible for the controversial Federal Reserve System that we had. And it's interesting that a Democrat, Woodrow Wilson, who was the Democrats under Andrew Jackson were opposed to, quote, the Bank of the United States and the Biddles, and they saw them as predatory bankers, and they weren't called banksters in those days, and that they wouldn't give low-interest loans or loans to what was considered to be Western farmers at the time, Tennessee, Kentucky, when that part of the United States were states. And so Andrew Jackson was always opposed to, quote, the bank. And I think John Calhoun, resigned from the vice presidency because of Jackson's opposition to the bank and Biddle and these Philadelphia people, Philadelphia banksters at that time. So it's always been controversial. It's still controversial today. And they snuck this through on a midnight vote in the U.S. Senate. So that's how we got the Federal Reserve System, which, incidentally, the black candidate for the Republican presidential nomination was on the Federal Reserve Bank branch in, I think, Kansas City. Among the other birthdays today, in 1895, these were twins. Louis and Auguste Lumiere started the first commercial movie theater. Among the other birthdays today, John von Neumann, a mathematician, famous mathematician and astronomer. And those of you who remember the movie All Quiet on the Western Front, Lou Ayres, was born in 1908. He was also played the vice presidential president in the movie The Best Man, which was one of the first movies to deal with homosexuality among a political candidate's and presidential candidate's background. The other film was Advice and Consent. And, of course, The Best Man was written by is a great movie. Excuse me. Still is bloody cold. 1929, the head of the controversial United Auto Workers, Owen Bieber, was born today. Great actress who starred in Death on the Nile. Great voice. Maggie Smith was born today. And then a recent book by this guy, Max Hastings, great historian. His birthday is today. Nigel Kennedy, the pop classical violinist, who's from Northern Ireland. And then the first test tube baby, Elizabeth King, was born in 1981. Among the deaths today, we had an antipope. Now, an antipope is someone who contests or who's put up as a candidate to challenge the popes who are usually voted on in the consistory consisting of the Roman Catholic cardinals. And there's been a lot of this in the middle part of the Catholic Church in like 14th century, where they didn't like the candidate that was selected by the cardinals, and so the kings set up their own. And in another case called the Avignon captivity, which was the French king did not like the man who was chosen as pope, and so he kidnapped the pope and kept him prisoner in Avignon. It was Saint Teresa finally told him that Christ has said you got to go back to Rome. And so we had these anti-popes, and we've even had popes who've been murdered. And this is coming out in a movie on, I think, the History Channel in the next couple of weeks. John Paul I, the last Italian to become pope, his name was Albino, and he was going to, he stated his intention to investigate the Vatican Bank, and 30 days later, he mysteriously died. And then we got John Paul II, the first Polish pope. Among the other birthday deaths today, famous Catholic saint, St. Francis de Sales. He started the Salesians, if I'm not mistaken. And then we had Mary of England, the oldest daughter of Henry VIII. She was a Catholic. It's interesting, she had a proxy marriage to Philip II. They never consummated it. She succeeded her father, Henry VIII, and she was a very strong Catholic, and she was known as Bloody Mary because she tried to suppress the Protestant religion that her father had set up with the Anglicans. And she was known as Bloody Mary, and she died at 32 years of age, and it was succeeded by Elizabeth, her younger sister, known as the Bastard, who was the daughter of Anne Boleyn from the second marriage, and Mary from the first marriage of Catherine of Aragon. She was Spanish and English. And, of course, Queen Elizabeth I reigned for 40 years, also known as the Virgin Queen, although there's some controversy about whether she was a virgin or not. And then the guy who invented, we'll skip that one. Then we had Maurice Ravel. Those of you who remember Bolero and... I forgot the woman that starred in this movie, and they used the theme Bolero, but it's known as part of the 50 pieces, the classical music, pop music that's played, Beethoven's Fifth, also Sprach Zarathustra, that sort of thing. And then the great American novelist, Theodore Dreiser, who wrote Sister Carrie and other, it was very controversial at the time, I think it was from Baltimore. And then in 1961, the young wife of President Woodrow Wilson, he had four daughters from the first marriage, and married again while he was in the White House to a younger woman named Edith Bowling Wilson. And when Wilson had his stroke after he toured the country and tried to persuade the country to support the League of Nations, which was his own fault because he didn't consult with the Senate. He was Senate. She allegedly signed documents in his place and acted as president. She died in 1961. And Joseph Liebling, another great... what happened to my computer here? Novelist became... he died today. And then Mendel Rivers, who was a U.S. congressman, segregationist from South Carolina. Even today, we still have many military bases in that part of the country because of Mendel Rivers. He didn't live that long. He died in his 60s. And then we had a Jersey cow in 1980 who had an artificial heart. This cow lived for 220 days. We don't know if she ever gave any milk. And then we had Sam Peckinpah. You remember all those bloody shoot 'em up Western movies? He died at age 59. And among the events today, Westminster Abbey was opened today. In 1732, Benjamin Franklin's Poor Richard's Almanac, their first ads came out for that. We had the first vice president to resign in 1832. This was John Calhoun in the Andrew Jackson administration, excuse me. In 1836, after all these revolutions in South America and in Mexico, Spain recognized Mexico's independence. And we had people like Santa Anna and later Benito Juarez, who was the granduncle of Raul Almison, who surfaced in the Steve Neri U.S. Navy sailor case, which is still ongoing. And there will be more on it in upcoming programs. And... what had happened was, and when Spain ruled Mexico, Mexico City was the administrative center for Spain's New World colonies. So if you had a problem, there was a problem in the Philippines or in Colombia or Puerto Rico, it had to go through Mexico City, then to Madrid, and that could have taken months. So if somebody was in prison illegally and he was protesting this, he had to make his petition through Mexico City, and they sent it to Madrid via galleon sailing ship. You can imagine what that was like. And then in 1846, Iowa became in the Union as the 29th state, and of course there's all this focus on Iowa come next week on their primary, presidential primary. And then we had the guy who invented chewing gum. It wasn't William Wrigley, which incidentally, made so much money on his gum that he was able to buy the Chicago Cubs and to build Wrigley Field, which he didn't have night lights for years. But anyway, this guy, William Semple, from Mount Vernon, Ohio, was the inventor of chewing gum. In, I think it was 1869. This is also interesting. A lot of people don't know that William Wrigley would not allow his children to chew his gum. Can you imagine this? And then in 1878, famous Roman Catholic Pope Leo XIII issued an encyclical, which is like a treatise on socialism. I haven't read it, but he was concerned about the abuses in the labor field of the working man and the revolution and ferment in Europe at that time, which also affected the Vatican. Among the other things, we're going to be, in the upcoming months, we're going to be presenting a lot of more interviews. About the time of the Westminster Dog Show, we'll have one of the last interviews that the great Roger Karras did with me, and a great radio voice. We're going to expose more of these media people who lie, who distort, who omit, and when called on their violations of the public trust, won't correct or are very arrogant about it and insulting, and this has happened. We'll start exposing them because they're costing the American taxpayer millions of dollars. All the cover-ups in public corruption, you wouldn't believe some of this stuff. Some of these media morons even got condos and got federal community development grant money for their bogus nonprofit organizations. So we'll be exposing them with documentation. And then, of course, again, there's the media fiction that only, that Jews control all of the media in America. That's not true. As I said on earlier programs, from my own experience, that the major papers, it's a variety of people. The New York Times was started by German Jews, the Oaks, O-C-H-S, I think they were from Tennessee. They've a couple of them anglicized their name to O-A-K-S. And then we have the Salzburgers, who are currently running that paper, are running into ground, according to some people. Philadelphia, Annenberg, who owned the racing chief, very controversial, allegedly connected to the mafia. This was a horse racing publication, and he parlayed that money into the Philadelphia newspapers. The Cleveland Plain Dealer, I think, was started by, I forgot who it was, but it wasn't a Jewish heritage person. Chicago Tribune was started by Joseph Medill, who was a Canadian from Nova Scotia. The Hearst papers were started by George Hearst, who I was told when I was at the Hearst Castle, was baptized Episcopalian, was from Missouri. The Los Angeles Times was started by the Chandlers, a guy who was a Southern Confederate. The San Francisco Chronicle was started by two Dutch Jews, the Young brothers, who used to publish, threatened to publish, had a little sheet where they went around and investigated scandals involving prominent people, and they went to these people telling them, if you want to keep your name off of our, out of our little sheets, you'll pay us off. That, in fact, is how that paper started. We had the McClatchy papers out here. They weren't Jewish. And then Newhart, or Newart, I think was German-Jewish, who had the USA Today and the Portland papers. So, and then, of course, we have Conrad Black, and we have people who have taken over. Marshall Field started the Chicago Sun-Times. I don't think he was a Jewish background. We never were able to uncover that. He also had a big department store in Chicago called Marshall Field & Company, a prominent store on State Street. But and then, of course, in the broadcast media, we had William Paley, who's from Chicago. He started in the cigar business, and the family name was Pilevsky. And he married a woman named Babe and became an Episcopalian. And, of course, interesting, a lot of our media people come from the Midwest because of their voice. You had Brokaw, who's from South Dakota, I think. We had Mike Wallace, whose family name is Russian-Jewish, Walachinsky. His son is on Fox TV. We're not sure about Rupert Murdoch. I heard that he was Australian, may have had some Jewish heritage in his background with Fox TV and then his papers in England and in Australia. NBC, National Broadcast, seems started by David Sarnoff, Russian-Jewish. We had the ABC, the youngest member of the major broadcasters. People were Redstone, people like that, believed to be Jewish heritage. So there's a mix there. And, of course, the most prominent Black is Oprah. And, of course, a lot of people are getting tired of her stuff. So, but she doesn't own a major broadcasting network. But And then one of the black sports network or cable networks, I think, is owned by a black guy who made his money in cosmetics. And then, of course, you have Ted Turner, the mouth from the South, with cable news network CNN. So, as I said, there is a mix. So we'll be back Friday, and next in January, some very interesting programs on, for instance, J. Edgar Hoover's taste in music for some of the films that depicted the FBI. He oversaw them very carefully because he wanted to control his image and the image of the FBI. And then we'll have why U.S. Navy and U.S. Marines will never be tried in San Francisco, a case that goes back about 3-4 years ago, and what really happened on New Year's Eve in San Francisco in a drunken brawl involving some college students and one or two U.S. Marines who were here on leave and were also from San Francisco. So one with our usual, and maybe over the weekend the Republican candidates will sit down and have a game of poker, and whoever wins takes the pot. Not the kind.
What do you say, Ben? Want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bets.
Cost you $5. Tony, up to you.
Hey, Tony, what are you going to do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Me too. Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year.
Big ace.
Ace bets.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where's the plan?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Here goes.
Possible straight, possible flush. Nothing.
Gentlemen, how about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
How's about we should make Jack Riley the guy?
Which Riley are you thinking of, Jack B or Jack Y?
I say neither one. I never even met him.
I say when you got a pair of Jack, bet up.
Politics and poker, shuffle up the cards and find the joker. He's a game for children, he's a game is rough. Decisions, decisions, like
who to pick,
how to play, not to bet.
Where's the call of
duck? All right now, fellas, politics or poker, which is more important?
Paratrays.
Bet 'em.
Little trays, good as gold.
Raise your five.
I'll fall.
I'll fold.
I'll raise your back.
I think you're bluffing.
Put your money where your mouth is.
Okay, I'm in.
Gentlemen, knock it off and let's get this done.
Try Michael Fudyashinkovich. I'm certain he'd run.
Mike is out. I'm afraid he just wouldn't sell. Nobody likes a candidate whose name they can't spell.
How about...
That was the problem with Pawlenty. So we'll be back Friday at 4 o'clock. This is Peter Paul Brazola. Go to our Amicus Veritas YouTube site, AmicusVeritas. We're uploading some new videos. I've got about 130 some up there now. This is Peter Paul Brazola. Good night.